He'd take a hug, then he'd hug her some more while she'd knit, 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 knit. He'd steal a kiss, then he'd take an encore and she'd knit, 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 knit. Under a tree he would rest with a smile. She'd lay her knitting down just for a while. A bird in a nest said, "Oh, give us a rest. Go on and knit, knit, knit."
I knitted when I was little,
yeah.
But it's not as if it's, you know, a huge part of my life sort of thing. But it came up as a concept for this show, and so, which I thought was great because it was reflective of what happened in the war anyway.
Absolutely,
anyone who could or even couldn't,
yep.
They soon learnt to knit, didn't they?
So. I pity the poor men who received the socks of those who couldn't.
I know. Well, I'm putting this in the show because I thought it was hilarious. And it's got some expletive somewhere, but we'll ignore the expletive. Yeah. Thanks for the socks. They are some fit. I use one for a helmet, the other for a mitt. Glad to hear you're doing your bit, but who the said you can knit?
Super.
I know.
Do you need any help? And she said knit, knit, knit.
You came up with the idea for this show.
Yeah, well, I did. I was asked to do a show at the Aratoi, and I sort of procrastinated it for a wee while because I couldn't seem to come up with a theme. And then, well, here's the little story here. One night I woke up in, in the night and remembered that my mother was named after her uncle who died in World War One. His name was Eric.
Wow.
I got up and Googled him.
Yep.
Found his photograph and all his war records, and that was it.
Wow.
And so I thought, right, that's me.
Yep.
That's what I'm going to do. And then it was kind of serendipitous that at the same time it was the commemorations for the beginning of World War One. So
fantastic. So it all kind of came together.
Yeah, went off with a bang. Yeah, so the other thing that sort of triggered the whole thing was the fact that Camp Road is just up the road where the Featherston Military Camp was established in 1916.
Yep.
And so that was the other thing that pulled the whole concept together, really, because
yeah.
It's right on our doorstep. And
yeah.
So, and there's so little record actually of what, you know, what kind of went on there. So,
yeah.
It became to me a thing of piecing together the story, a combination of the story of my uncles and what happened here at the military camp, and that's what the whole thing's become for me, kind of a story and a journey of World War One and how it actually kind of transpired for these guys that started their journey here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
wow.
It's like this was, yeah, they left from here all excited. We're off on a big adventure, you know. Boys' own annual sort of adventure stuff.
Yeah. And that's how it was sold to them as well.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, and that's how it started for me. Mm. I sort of, this is very quaint, isn't it, having a military camp up the road. And then as I got into it, I thought, whoa, you know, this is...
Yeah,
it's pretty awful, really, the whole
And your
thing.
Your relative, your ancestor Eric,
yes.
What kind of war did he have?
What kind of war did he have? Well, there were two of them. I get them a little bit muddled up, but Eric served for, David will remember, a couple of years, and he suffered wounds on the Somme. I think he was in the first battle of the Somme, and ended up in a hospital in England, and the descriptions are there on his sheets. They're actually, you know, awful. He appeared dazed and confused and some wound in his back and, you know, dilated pupils, and the other guys in the trench were killed. So he was in a bad state of shock. But then you read that and he was back on the field within about 10 days. So Yeah, and then I think he went over the top and was... Actually, the first record on that day was that he was wounded in action, and then later in the day, you know, recorded as being killed in action.
Oh,
so it's one of, I think it could be one of the grisly, you know, those where they couldn't get him off the field. They knew he was wounded, he was out there, couldn't get him in, etc. So that was, and you sort of put together this picture when you see all these movies, and it's horrific, actually. Mm. And Cyril, he served for longer. He was away for longer. He was away for about 5 years. First went to the sewers, and then Suez Canal, that is, not the sewers, as in underground latrines. And then he ended up in France, on the coast in France, where he trained for 6 months and went on to the Somme, can't remember which battle of the Somme, and was killed on his first day.
Oh, Gertie, my dear, every day when you hear that recruits are acquired by the swarm, don't forget when they shout for the men to come out, there are jobs that a girl can perform. The war's not your game, there is work just the same that your dainty wee fingers can do. You can knit little wraps for the gallant young chaps who are fighting for Britain and you. So, Gertie, get on with your knitting. Take up your needles and wool. Start once again with the purl and the plain, same as they taught you at school. The boys in the trenches are sitting with tootsies as cold as ice blocks. So Gertie, get on with your knitting. Gertie, get on with your socks.
How have you recruited your knitters?
Well, I just put together a poster, and I knew there were a couple of knitting groups here in Featherston, so they were my first point of contact, and they just wholeheartedly got on board, as you saw them at the community centre.
They're a driven bunch, aren't they?
Oh, they are driven, all right. I can't believe what they come up with. It's embarrassing. I go there and do my sort of old style, you know, slipping stitches and running, and they help me, and they whiz bang put things together every time I turn up. One woman, I dropped the wool in her letterbox in the morning. I know she was at a market all day in the hut, so she didn't get back or pick up the wool till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. By 11 o'clock at night, she'd posted on my Facebook page the finished beanie.
Wow. You can't compete with that.
That's a dedicated knitter. I know. I know. I know.
So you've got your knitters, and then do you give them the patterns?
Yeah. Well, that was my first... I wanted to set some parameters so that we didn't get all bright, stripy scarves and things, you know. So I thought, okay, we'll knit them in authentic drab olive khaki sort of tones. And so I got... wool. I actually got a grant from South Wairarapa District Council. They didn't, unfortunately, sponsor the knitting aspect of the project, but I did choose to use some of the money for that because I thought it was a really important part of the project because it's pulling people together. Yes. You know, it's pulling the community together, which is great. And so I got a whole bunch of khaki wool.
Yeah.
And I started frantically researching patterns because, of course, they are screaming for patterns and I hadn't quite got that far yet. So, you know, it galvanises one into action, a project.
Yeah, I imagine. And it's kind of the war spirit has been shot through the whole...
Totally. Yeah. It was just like that. And I learned all about Lady Liverpool Foljam, who... she was the Governor General's wife, and she kind of started the Patriotic Society pretty much at the same time as the war was announced.
Right.
And within weeks, literally, she had people knitting. So I wanted to use genuine World War One patterns, basically. And so I discovered this book that came out by Lady Liverpool Foljam, and it was this real cute little knitting book, and I couldn't get a copy of it, but I knew they had a copy at Alexander Turnbull Library, but I've been far too busy to get over there. And so one of these ladies that I met at the Strada Cafe works in the Masterton Library, and honestly, about the day after I met her, she phoned me up and she said, Nikki, the most exciting thing has happened. This elderly lady has come into the library with this book, and it's Her Excellency's knitting book by Lady Foljam, published in 1915 or something.
Oh,
an original
goodness.
Copy of it.
Wow.
I mean, you know, serendipity.
Absolutely.
And so, of course, I toddled straight round with a jar of jam.
Everything's only right for Lady Foljam, isn't it?
and my camera, and frantically sort of photographed this book. So it was so exciting to lay eyes on this book that I was sort of worshipping by that stage. Shall I show you my
sleeve? Please do. Yes.
Yeah, they are.
A wonderfully chunky.
Oh, and a balaclava. Yes, well, I was quite pleased.
And you knitted this?
Oh, myself.
Wow, on the four needle thing.
On the four needles.
Fantastic, look the real deal, don't they? Look at that wonderful heel.
Isn't it good?
Yeah.
And of course the Kitchener Toe, which I learnt about.
Tell me about the Kitchener Toe.
The Kitchener Toe. So, Lord Kitchener, you know the "We want you" poster with the big moustache.
Yes.
That's Lord Kitchener.
Right.
Now, he had a lot of trouble with men in trenches having bloody toes and problems with their feet, basically.
Right.
And he realised that a lot of socks had nasty seams and, lumpy toes and things. And I don't know if he was a knitter himself or whether he just commissioned somebody to invent a better way of doing a toe. But apparently he worked out how to graft a toe. And it's called, to this day, the Kitchener Toe.
Goodness me.
And there it is.
So it always comes to a point at the toe.
Well, it's the way that, because you're coming along on one needle on the front and one needle on the back, and you just start to knit sort of one stitch off each.
Got it, I see.
Needle.
Yep. Yeah. And then it's almost a very, very soft point at the end. Well, not even a point, just a soft kind of.
Yeah, they're sort of merged. Sort of merging.
Whereas the modern sock has the seam going across the front. Yeah.
Dreadful things, modern socks.
Yeah.
So that's that. And these are the labels that I've been making for them. So they're...
Oh, so these are leather labels? No,
they're actually ceramic.
Oh, are they? Oh,
so
yes.
I've been trundling up and down every week to the wonderful King Street Artworks in Masterton and making ceramics. So these are dog tags. So what I've done is I've put the dedication to the soldier's name on one side of the dog tag and the person who knitted
the article
on the other side. So they're linked.
And they'll get attached to the item.
Attached to the item. And then a little bit of information. So a little bit of information about the soldier and hopefully a photograph. So
this is your relative, is it?
No, this is actually David's great uncle, who we just discovered a couple of days ago. So this was very exciting to have discovered Cyril.
Killed by bomb accident.
Excellent, exactly.
Not even in the war itself, an accident.
Well, he was there, an Armentier, but obviously not on the front.
Oh, God.
It's
too tragic, isn't it?
It's terrible.
Do you find that your mind is occupied with these young men now?
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh. Totally. In fact, there's one friend of mine who's knitted and crocheted a beanie, and she hasn't got anyone in her family, or she hasn't been able to find out about them. And I said, well, there's plenty of soldiers who you could dedicate it to. So I started looking them up on the Great Arm Memorial.
Yeah.
And found a list. And the first one that I hit upon, lovely looking chap. What's his name? Amos. Somebody Amos. And I thought, well, I should send her the picture through who she's going to dedicate her work to. And she wrote straight back to me and she said, you must be emotionally exhausted, Nikki. What a beautiful face. She said she felt quite emotional.
Yeah.
Just that I'd sent this information through to her in a photograph of this guy. And she was really quite moved. So, and then when she said, you must be emotionally exhausted, I sort of thought about it and thought, I probably am.
Mm.
You know, I've spent this whole year just focusing on all of this tragedy, really.
Absolutely. And do you find that the women who are knitting for you, and most of them have got relatives that they're kind of focusing on, but it's definitely given them a impetus to find out more about their stories.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. As time's gone on, that's what started happening, and that's what I hoped would happen.
Yeah.
So there is more of that, and people are excited. They write to me, oh, I found something, you know, I found something. And I just think, well, that's great, because, and they're talking in their families about it. They're phoning up relatives and trying to find something out. And they're going into their archives and finding photographs, and they're all talking about it. So
that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing, because as I say, otherwise they're just names on a, you know, and to me that's not enough. These guys, they were young, they were in their 20s, they need more. It's 100 years ago, and you just think how quickly you lose memory of people. So that's why I called it my show Remember to Remember, because to me, remember is putting back together again, it's putting pieces together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's about remembering to remember.
Up to mighty London came an Irishman one day. As the streets are paved with gold, sure everyone was gay. Singing songs of Piccadilly, Strand and Leicester Square, till Paddy got excited, then he shouted to them there. It's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. Goodbye, Piccadilly, farewell, Leicester Square. It's a long, long way to Tipperary, but my heart's right there.